Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shaudell, broadcasting to all you interested foodies out there across Long Island. And I'm here with co-host and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. Welcome to the Halloween and Election Day edition of Playing with Fire.
I know, right? It's exciting times. You got elections going on all over the country, which we're not allowed to talk about because we get yelled at. We talk about politics.
I've given up on politics. They're way too political.
They are. And you know, it resembles a kind of a skit written by Larry David and furnished by Hart, Schaffner, and Marx, you know what I mean? The Brooks brothers, all these guys in all these great suits running around playing kabuki theater. Anyway.
It's safer to talk about Halloween.
Halloween's much safer to talk about. I love candy. I don't know about you.
Again, listeners know that I get really intrigued by where things come from, derivation.
Right.
And Halloween... this thing about giving out candy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know there was trick-or-treat, so I guess if you didn't give a treat, you got tricked or something or whatever.
Yeah.
But I wonder what the first Halloween was all about, like what people got when they went to the door. I know when I was a kid, we were all involved with not only trick-or-treating for candy, but also... trick-or-treat for UNICEF. You'd
yeah,
carry
UNICEF
a can around.
Can. Yeah, I remember that.
You do that. But I just wonder where all this came from.
I don't know, but every culture seems to have a fascination with the dead. You know, the Mexicans especially. I mean, you see all those masks that they have with the wrestlers and all the cartoons, you know, depict the afterlife and, you know, whatever. I watch my grandkids watching some of these cartoons, and I don't know how I feel about it. I guess I'm okay with it, but it seems a little weird to me, you know. You go from Rocky and Bullwinkle to, you know, the hereafter or whatever. But anyway, yeah, there seems to be a fascination. I think it starts as some kind of a religious thing or whatever. I'm not really sure. But the good news is that if you're into candy, Halloween's the way to go. I mean, it's fabulous. And I think it's kind of a sad commentary on our times today because, you know, the kids can't trick-or-treat, like, with reckless abandon the way we did when we were kids. You know, now it's got to be, you know, kind of controlled and the parents are there and make sure that they, you know, no shenanigans are going on.
Yeah, the parents have to be there. The new thing is to walk around with cocktails when the parents are escorting the kids. I don't understand, but... I'm not talking fallacy.
That's the trick, you know.
I went with Carrie and the kids years ago, and they would, you know, conceal beer and stuff. In today's world, it's all about these spiked seltzers.
Yeah, yeah. I whatever you do to get through, I guess, you know. But it's funny. There's, you know, I don't want to sound like a complete freak foodie, but there are candies and there are candies, you know. And I think that I think if you can, you know, financially able to do it, you should up your Halloween game a little because there's not as many kids as there used to be. You know, this generation is much smaller than we were. You know, we were the boomers, I guess, whatever. So you can up your candy game a little bit, you know, and, you know, buy some good stuff, especially because my grandkids are going to come home with it, and I like to raid the jar, you know what I mean? I don't want to be eating some, what would I call it, you know, some B-level candy bar, man. I want the A-level stuff, you know. You know what else is going on, too? The World Series is going on, right?
It is. I didn't know you were into baseball.
I'm not. to me, it's like watching a bridge rust. But I can get into a little bit of the playoff baseball. You know, I played it as a kid, and I was actually pretty good at it. But I just, as an adult, I don't know, I can't watch it for more than 10, 15 minutes. But it is what it is. But anyway, I caught a little bit of the game last night. I guess the Houston Astros were kicking the you-know-what out of the Atlanta Braves, who kicked the you-know-what out of the Houston Astros in the first game. So I guess it's evened up, and now they're going to Atlanta, which is a great city with great restaurants, by the way.
Really? That might be an interesting thing to do reviews or get interaction from our listeners about great restaurants across the country.
Well, you know, I used to fly to the Super Bowl every year with my dear buddy Marty and a couple of guys. And we would go, and I remember the first time I went, I was really excited to go to the game. And the first one I went to was when the Miami Dolphins played the San Francisco 49ers at Stanford Stadium. And tickets were crazy. You know, they were talking about, you know, and I'm going back to mid-80s. I guess it was 84 or 5, whatever it was. And, you know, I think the tickets were like $600 or $700 for the game at the time. But they say you could scalp them when you got there for like $1,000. I'm thinking, boy, that's a good idea.
You know what tickets are now?
No.
And I talk from experience, $3,500 face value to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, here's I'm going to give you all who've never been to the Super Bowl some Super Bowl tips, all right? Because I'm a veteran of Super Bowls. I've been to, California, Detroit, Florida, you know, the whole thing, following these knuckleheads around watching the game. About the second year, we realized that, you know, if you take the money that you would normally put on, you know, a ticket for the Super Bowl, let's say it's $3,500 now, right? So if you took that money and instead of going to the game, where you really don't see it all that much, and you go to like a bar with a big flat screen TV, you know, or 10 of them, a sports bar, you see way more of the game. And you have $3,500 to spend on whatever you want to spend it on. Personally, for me, it was always restaurants because that's what I do. You know, I was always, to me, it was always a lot more fun when the Super Bowl was in New Orleans, because New Orleans is such a great city. And when you get there, and we used to stay in the French Quarter, which is where all the happenings were, right? And it was kind of like Mardi Gras, but it was like a different element. You know, it was like a little bit of a higher-end element. Mardi Gras can sometimes draw some pretty strange cats, but this was like a big pep rally in the middle of the, in the middle of the French Quarter. You had the, when I was down, it was the Bears and the Patriots were playing it one year, you know? And you had one group, you know, with the Bears uniforms on and whatever. And then the other group had, you know, the Patriots and going back and forth. It was all good natured. And one of the funniest things I ever saw, I was walking down, I don't know, it was Bourbon Street or Rue Royale or whatever. And I see this like crowd of people around a guy with a TV camera and another guy with a microphone. And they were interviewing these four guys. And I was trying to see what was going on. When I finally got up to the front, the four guys were standing there, and I had T-shirts on that said, Myrtle wouldn't let Harry come to the Super Bowl, right? So, you know, Harry was home just seething, you know what I mean? Watching his friends down there with T-shirts torturing him for not being able to go. So anyway, it's always a good time. But again, I used to go, you know, getting back to the restaurants across the country thing that you were saying is, we used to just basically set up, you know, three or four or five really good dinners in the restaurants around where the Super Bowl was. And it was always a good, you know, excuse to go and check them out. So my advice, according to Tom, if you happen to go to the World Series or if you happen to go to the Super Bowl or any other big sporting event, you know, save the money on the ticket, watch it on TV, and go to the restaurants. You know, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, there's a lot to be said about that. It's interesting. It actually all comes together. So recently,
this would be a first.
Yes. Recently, I had an opportunity to speak to someone of the clergy in regards to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So my thoughts and feelings on religion and interaction with God is that I can do it anywhere. I can have my conversation needed, when needed. I don't need to be in a
building.
In a building.
Yeah.
And the clergy member said, Stu, there's definitely something to be said about your opinion, but the interaction of others when you pray is it's just very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The to see the vibrance of people and the interaction takes it that much further. So when you're saying what you did, it's the same thing with sports. I really don't enjoy watching it on TV. I guess I used to as a kid, you know, I would watch baseball and basketball and everything.
Right.
I guess there's so much else going on today that I'm distracted. But I've had some opportunities where I've had access to do things for a little bit. I used to drive for a limo company. And in the old days, you actually could use a used ticket stub to get into an event. So if I was going to a football game and dropped off a client and was waiting for them, if somebody was leaving, they might give me their stub and I was able to walk into the event.
Sure.
I've had some incredible experiences relating to that. I've walked into an All-Star game, sat next to Richard Gere, and then, you know, left.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten to go to a football game.
But his wife, give you the ticket. I can't take it anymore.
Well, actually, that's really funny. As I was once at a Rolling Stones concert at MetLife Stadium. I'm sitting outside waiting for people, and there's a couple leaving just as the concert's starting.
Yeah.
And I said, can I get your ticket stub? They said, sure. But I said, I got to ask, why are you leaving? She goes, the man said, my wife just gave birth like a week ago. It's like 100 degrees here. She's just not comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And he gave me the ticket, and I was able to walk in. But all I'm getting at is, you say it's not exciting or you don't need to be at the game.
Yes.
It's a total different experience.
It is.
There's just an intoxication, an excitement, an involvement being at a live event. And it's similar, I guess, in music. If you can listen to something on the radio, but if you get to see something live, it's just
powerful. Music, I think, is different. The sports thing to me, I mean, like golf and football, you see so much more on TV than you do on when you go, you know. I mean, the coverage is incredible, you know. Baseball game's a little different, you know. It's easier to follow, you know. Football, when you're sitting in a nosebleed section, they look like a bunch of little ants running around, you know. And I don't know, I think to me, if you're paying $40 to go to a game, great. You know, $3,500? I don't know, man.
Well, take it to golf. That's something you enjoy. With these new fancy TVs, you can literally see the dew on a blade of grass.
It's crazy, right? Yeah, the high def thing is that. How is this related to food? I don't know. We keep getting off on these things. So I know the concession. So there I was standing behind Doug Flutie, of all people, right? You remember him. He was the quarterback for Notre Dame that threw that great Hail Mary pass and wound up getting the Heisman Trophy. And then he went into the pros, and he was, I think he might have been with New York for a while. But
I think he was with New York for a while.
Anyway, so I'm standing actually in front of him on the hot dog line at Stanford Stadium at the Super Bowl when the Dolphins were playing the 49ers. I guess it was halftime. It was a big long line. So there's, I don't know, 30 of us on a one line. There's a bunch of lines there. And I turn around. And to see, there was some commotion behind me or whatever. I turn around, and there he is standing right behind me, Doug Flutie. And we're the same size. And I'm thinking to myself, now, okay, he may be in a little better shape than I am, but we're the same height. We're the same size. And I'm thinking, he has the courage of, you know, who, to be standing in the pocket with these monsters, you know, trying to rip his head off. I'm like, that guy is, like, impressive, you know? I mean, I always had a lot of respect for him because he was such a, you know, good player and all. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. I mean, who that size plays that game with those guys, you know?
That's crazy. So you talk about concessions. This is really out of control. I don't know where I read this, but there's a new concession format or protocol. I think one of the arenas out west, there's actually contactless checkout.
Yeah.
So somehow, when you get something, you take something from the concessionaire, and as you walk out of the area, it automatically debits your credit card. So if you're registered in this program, somehow there's some coding on the coding, not coating.
Yeah, yeah.
On the wrapper,
right?
So that when you leave, it records what you've purchased.
How do I know it's you?
That's a good question.
Get back to me on that one.
That's a good question.
Yeah, you know, I was speaking of concessions, you know, and I'll draw this back to food because that's what I'm not paid to do here. I was contacted about 3 or 4 years ago by a very, very big concession company that takes care of...
say the name? Center Plate.
Center Plate, right. And, you know, they take care of big... you know, stadiums and stuff like that all over the country, right? So they were going to do the bidding on some New York properties. And I guess what they do is they go into each, you know, city that they're going to go to. Let's say they're going to go to San Francisco and they're going to take over the 49ers stadium. They're going to do the food out of there. They partner with a local chef generally, and they get to use their recipes and or their branding or their name or whatever. And I guess it works out well for everybody, which is the story of my life, right? So anyway, I got contacted, and they took over the concession at Jones Beach for a while. And they asked me if I wanted to partner with them and kind of guide, you know, the food service program down at Jones Beach. And I said, yeah, I would love to do that. It's kind of fun, you know. And I met with them, and we signed a deal. It was a three-year deal. And, you know, when I was in the meeting with these people, they were talking about what to put on the menus, you know, down at the Jones Beach concessions. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what do people eat when they go to the beach? They eat hot dogs, you know, and they eat hamburgers, I guess. You know, that's always a given. And so we were batting things around. And I said to them, as they were talking, I said, you know, you guys aren't from the area. I said, the one thing you're missing here is there's a tremendous Latin American population on Long Island and Queens, you know, people that use the beaches. You know, where are the tacos? You know, and they go, what? I said, what about tacos? I mean, they're easy to make. They're inexpensive. You can sell them for $4, you know. And, you know, I don't understand why we're not talking about that. So anyway, I give them this menu, right? And I rework some of their salads and things that they wanted to do down there. And so the guy, I guess the executive chef, whoever, he flew into town and, you know, they decided to try this taco thing. And he comes back to me. He goes, nah, they're too hard to make. I'm like, I can't think of anything easier than the taco. I mean, it's literally, it takes seconds, you know, if you're ready to put it together. So anyway, they kind of poo-pooed me. And you know, not that I'm the you know, the oracle of, you know, cooking information, but I know a little bit about what's going on here on Long Island. And they kind of shoved me to the side and went and did what they were going to do, you know, which was the same thing everybody else did. So for 2 years, I was kind of sort of, what would you call it, cut out of the loop or whatever. And they still paid me and all. It was just the weirdest thing. And at the end of the day, they offered me to take over one of the, I think it was the West End 6 or 5 or whatever. They're just east of the pencil
the
down there.
The project that almost was.
Yeah, and I said, okay, I'll do that. But, you know, we had an agreement, and then all of a sudden the agreement started to change, and the lawyers got involved, and it got all twisted up. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, nothing happened. It was all, you know, just I wasted, you know, $8,000 in lighting and this, that, and the other thing, which I used at Amano. It doesn't matter. But yeah, it was the strangest thing, and I think it could have been a real cool thing because I wanted to, you know, kind of upgrade a little bit. And I don't mean financially, I just mean quality wise upgrade what was going on down there, because there's things I think now the younger people, and I see it at the club, they use these things differently. They use the beach differently than the older people. Remember, the only, you know, I go to the beach with my grandparents or something, they'd pack this basket and cooler, and, you know, they have sodas in there and, you know, pickles and sandwiches and that and the other thing. Kids don't do that anymore. They come, they got, you know, they have some disposable income. They go up, they buy a dog or a, you know, a sandwich or grilled cheese, whatever. But I think that, you know, you could you could really do some interesting little finger foods there that would fly at the beach. And I don't know, they looked at me like I was out of my mind. I'm thinking, well, why'd you hire me? You know, I don't get it. You know? I mean, wouldn't you rather have something like that at the beach than, you know, the standard, you know? I mean, how many hot dogs can you eat?
Yeah, no, again, I love when you come to a project and put your watermark on
it. 2 cents, as they say.
You know, it's always, again, it's just always interesting.
You know, the thing about food is that, you know, when you rely on people, you want to rely on people who are passionate and interested in the product. I mean, I get the financial end of business. I say that, but I probably really don't, because I never really make any money. But the bottom line is, I do. I understand the business end of it. I understand the costs. I understand it has to be a profit. I understand all of that stuff. But there's another aspect to this business has to be, in my humble opinion, you know, interesting, well-executed, high quality to have you stand out from other people. You know, why does Tony Scotto's restaurants, you know, do so well? Because he pays attention to those three things. Is it expensive? Yeah, it's expensive. And if you're not in that category to be able to afford that, then you shouldn't go. Don't go there and, you know, spend money you don't have and then cry about, you know, how much money it was. You know going in what it's going to be. But he doesn't skimp on quality. He doesn't skimp on decor. He doesn't skimp on, you know, help. He just does it right, you know. And those are the people, I think, that stand out. The other people that stand out in restaurants, I think, are the people who take a little bit of a powder on what everybody else is doing, and they do something different. Now, I've had the occasion to eat in Marini for the last, twice in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. Have you ever been there, Marini in Roosevelt Field?
I think I was there once.
Yeah, it's owned by a gentleman named Michael White, and Michael White's a talented chef. He's got some places in the city. He's got a place in D.C. He may even have a place or two in Jersey, if I'm not mistaken, but his flagship is a place called Marea, which is in the old San Domenico location on Central Park South, right by the statue there.
That's the name that I remember, maybe.
Marea, yeah. And he's got another place down in the 30s called I Fiori. I think it's on, I want to say 6th or 7th Avenue and 32nd, something like that, in one of the hotels there. And he's got a place called Marini. I think that's downtown a little further. He's got a Marini in Washington, D.C. He may even have one in Jersey, if I'm not mistaken. And anyway, so he landed on Long Island. And the interesting thing about New York chefs who come to Long Island is most of the time they're here for a little while and they go running back to the city where it's safe, you know, when they have business 7 days a week. Out here, you know, you really have to know the lay of the land to succeed. And, you know, while they may have enough money to cushion, a restaurant that's only busy 2 days a week, ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, nobody likes to throw money away. So they usually wind up running back. That happened to Drew Nearport, and it happened to the pastry chef. I'll think of his name in a minute. Anyway, Drew had originally opened a place in Bayville where Crescent Club is. Oh. And he also had a place in the Hamptons for a while. And he went back to the city. And you know, it's what they know, you know. I have his name right at the tip of my tongue. Pastry chef, who a very talented guy. And he opened up in Manhasset. He's French. And I went to his opening. He had an opening. And then about 2 weeks later, he had a grand opening party. So I went to the party. And he pulled me aside. He goes, "Tom, what is this with these people from Long Island? Nobody comes out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Everybody wants to eat Saturday, 8 o'clock. I don't have it." I'm like, "Dude, well, you ain't in Kansas anymore, man. This is a whole new thing for you, you know." So we were laughing about it. Anyway, he went running back, too, to the city. So my point is, Roosevelt Field got two very talented chefs to open restaurants in Roosevelt Field. You have Small Batch, which is opened by Tom Colicchio, who's of Top Chef fame. You know, you've seen him. He's the bald guy that kind of, runs the whole thing. Very talented and nice guy. Great chef, nice guy, talented man, wonderful. And this guy, Michael White, who trained in Italy for some years. And I got to tell you, his pasta-making skills are phenomenal. And I was talking to Joan Remnick the other day, who is actually writing the foreword to my new book as we speak. And I said to her, I said, you got to get over to Marini and have the pastas. The rest of the menu is the rest of the menu. It's fine, whatever. But the pastas are just killer. And she says, "Oh, what'd you have?" I said, "Well, I had the cappelletti with the truffle regatta. I had the malfatti with crab meat, lemon, and tomato. I had the gnocchi with broccoli rabe pesto." You know, I'm eating pasta like it's going out of style. I'm in a diabetic coma by the end of the month, you know. But anyway, my point with all this rambling is that they've stepped away. You know, he's doing pastas like you do them in Italy. He's not doing the orchietti with the bad sausage and the broccoli rabe, or the, you know, he does a bolognese, he does a classic bolognese. It's probably his only concession to American tastes. And it's so refreshing for me to go to a place like that. And, you know, I on the way home, I'm thinking about my next trip there, you know, like, oh, man, I can't wait. The next time I'm going to try the, you know, squid ink with the whatever, you know. It's just, it's that good. So you got to get your rear end over there as fast as you can and go have some pasta at Marini. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. And they're not all that expensive. I mean, you know, they probably run in the mid-20s or something, you know. a high 20s if there's, you know, shellfish in there or something like that. But it's and the shame of it is, you know, I go there on weeknights because obviously I'm working weekends. They're not all that busy, which is like incredible to me. I mean, I don't think higher end restaurants in that mall. You know, I think if Marini was in the Americana, they'd be 24/7 out the door.
But it's interesting you say that. I mean, I guess you have Roosevelt Field, and then you have a little further east and north is Walt Whitman.
Yeah.
Walt Whitman has this more affluent tone to it, and I wonder if they would also do better there.
Well, you know, Del Frisco's was there, and they went the way of the Whigs, you know?
Right, and I think, well, actually, what's interesting, I think Ruth Chris is increasing its footprint on Long Island.
Is it? Yeah.
I know the Garden City location by Roosevelt Field was privately owned and was corporate takeover in the last 12, 18 months, I believe.
Oh, yeah. It was a lady from Pennsylvania that owned it.
Yeah. And now I believe they're opening up in Lake Grove. And
we used
also
to call it Lake Grave. There's nothing going on out there.
And also Melville. And curiously, those are all Simon properties, I think.
Yeah, I think the one in Walt Whitman is taking over the location that was Del Frisco's.
So it's interesting that Del Frisco, then, I mean, Del Frisco is one of my favorite restaurants in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
It's right.
Double Eagle Steakhouse.
Yeah, it's right across the street from, I don't know where that comes from. Maybe it came from Texas.
Yeah.
But the restaurant is right adjacent to Radio City in the city. And if we're going to something, performance there, we many times try to get a reservation, which is not easy.
When somebody comes out, just get their ticket and sneak in like they did, you know.
That would work. Well, that's actually a funny story, you know. When you go peer over at the reservation list and you take somebody's name. But
when you're done, I'll tell you a great story about that.
Well, in the spirit of cooperation, let's hear it now.
All right. 100 years ago, I had a place called Panama Hattie's, right? In Huntington, and it was one of those August nights where, you know, the electricity was like blinking and stuff, you know, everybody had the air conditioning on at home, and there was a problem. There was a brownout in the area, right? So everybody had their air conditioners off. We had them on, you know, and so we got really busy, and I'm normally in the kitchen. My partner at the time, Marty, was on vacation or had gone away, so I'm working the front door, right? Which is, I'm not qualified to do this, right? I don't have the temperament. I don't, you know, I'm just, that's not where I belong. Right? I belong in the back where nobody can see me. I can do whatever I want. So I'm up there in the front. I'm trying to be, you know, pragmatic about what's going on. I got walk-ins. I got reservations. I'm trying to coordinate this whole thing. We're busy as hell. Everybody's yelling at me, you know. So I get this guy comes in. He goes, party of six? So I'm looking at the time slots, and I see this party of six, and Smith? And he goes, yeah, Smith. Okay, follow me, right? So I take him back to his seat and then sit the seat, six people down. I go back up to the hostess desk and the real Smith comes in. And so this guy goes, party of six, Smith. And I went, oh, what's the phone number? So he gives me the phone number. Now I realize I just sat these six people and the guy was, you know, scamming a reservation, right? So I look at Mr. Smith. I said, you know what? I'll be right back. I have a problem here. Just give me 2 minutes. I'll straighten it out. So he goes, okay. He was a nice guy, right? So I go back to the table where I had seated the six people, and I look at the guy, and I said, so, Mr. Smith, you know, we have a little problem here, you know? He says, what? What's the problem? I said, well, the real reservation is standing in the front waiting to sit down. So he goes, well, what are you going to do, throw me out? And I said, you know what? That's a capital idea. And I grabbed him by the back of the collar. I dragged them through the restaurant out the front door. And I went back for the rest of the party, and they're all scrambling because, yeah, this lunatic, you know, restaurant owner throwing the people out. And I went back to the real Mr. Smith, and I said, right this way, sir. You know, sat him down. Who does this? I mean, who steals a reservation? I mean, out of your mind, you know? And I was younger then, and I was volatile, you know, so I wasn't the guy to play with back then.
You know. There you go. Yeah. So talking about dining experiences, I had an opportunity to dine at Fogo de Chão.
Fogo de Chão, yeah, that Brazilian steakhouse, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So I was
there. That's in Clark Place, my hometown.
Yes. It's right on Old Country Road.
It's where Mason Mint used to be.
We've talked about that. Yeah. I am in search. Maybe we should use the airwaves for this. I would do almost anything to get pictures of that candy factory. I remember
I would
as
do
a
almost
youth,
anything to get pictures of you doing anything.
But we used to drive by that area, and there was a series of almost billboards, but they were the replicas
of
the different candies.
Yeah, they had the dots out, the big box of dots. They had the mint.
Peppermint mints.
Yeah, yeah.
So if anybody has any photos of that, you would really.
That would bring a tear to my eye, because we used to go in the back and rob the candy when they were out on the loading docks. You know, we'd go steal a mint and
again,
run like hell.
I've searched the internet trying to find that, and I've never been able to. So if any of our listeners have any photos, I would really, really, really enjoy that sent to us at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And if you don't have pictures, but you know where they might be, say the Call Place Library or something, give me some insight. I'd really, really like to find those.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of, it was like the woods back there behind it, lots, and there was railroad tracks. And I lived east of that, and we used to just walk down the railroad tracks and the Mason Mint thing. We'd wait for the guys not to be there, and we'd go grab a box of dots and run through the woods, you know, and they would chase us. It was hilarious. It was like Huck Finn, you know, growing up there.
Wow.
There was actually a dairy on the corner. One Oak Dairy was on the corner of Carl Road and Old Country Road. And when I was a kid, there were cows there, you know what I mean? Where I guess it's Shiro's of Japan and Sam Ash, that
oh, I know where that
right
is.
Yeah, right there. There was a dairy farm there.
You know, when you start talking about history and what was, here in Farmingdale, down the road, I believe there, from our studios, I believe there was a pickle factory.
Yeah, it was all kinds of farmland here. This was like, you know, I remember my uncle moved to Comac, you know, from Queens back in probably the late 50s. And they all thought, you know, we're going to have an intervention. Where are you going? You know what I mean? There's like nothing out there. They'd be out there shooting guns in the backyard. It was crazy, you know. But, it's you know, some of the restaurants, too, you know, bringing it back to food. That whole Old Country Road strip where I grew up over there was just one restaurant after another. We had, you know, I just saw this thing on the internet where, you know, you have those sites. It's like where you grew up sites, you know.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of it. You know what Carl Place or Beth Page is. Anyway, the Carl Place site, they had a they had a photograph of an old local newspaper in there, and in on the page were two of the restaurants that I worked at as a kid, you know, and that were, I guess, at the time advertising, and one was advertising prime rib dinner $3.95 complete with soup, salad bar, and, you know, dessert or whatever. And it was just such a nostalgic thing for me. And then I remember going through all of those restaurants from, like, you know, where Ellison Avenue is and Old Country Road.
Sure.
If you take, well, Julio Cesare's was originally.
I was just going to say, I know real estate by restaurants.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Me too, you know. That's how I give directions. You go to Julio Cesare's, you make a left, and you go down the road a little bit, you get to the John Peel room, you make a right, you know.
That's a restaurant caught in a standstill.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, Julio's was originally on Old Country Road. They moved that restaurant.
It's just like set back.
Yeah, and then next to that was a place called the Wagon Wheel. And then next to that was where I worked at the Sirloin Steak Pub. Then you went down a little more, and it was the Sulky.
Now you're making me crazy. So growing up, I didn't have spaghetti. I would have Wagon Wheels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you'd open the box of Wagon Wheels, and it'd be like an Indian or a cowboy, which probably would be like sacrilegious today.
Well, you could have the cowboy. You couldn't have the Indian.
But I wonder what the brand was on Wagon Wheels.
Ronzoni.
Was it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So then you go to the Sulky, and then a little further down, there was Libby's Diner. And then after Libby's Diner, you got to the Cherry Stone Inn, which became the Bombay Bicycle Club years later, you know. And then further down, you had Gamois, which was the Chinese restaurant.
Oh, yeah, the John Peel Room.
And across the street was the John Peel Room, yeah. And on the corner, if you went up the other way, you went towards Post Avenue, you had Pepe's, where Chick-fil-A is now, where we all used to hang out.
There used to be a restaurant on Post Avenue in Westbury that it was like singing an opera. Benny's?
Benny's, yeah. Benny's just closed about a year ago.
But in the old days, I think the waiters all sang.
They might have, yeah. Yeah, then there was a place, a classic place on the corner of Old Country Road and Post Avenue on the, would be the southwestern corner called Felice's when I got there, to where that, that became the rickshaw, and now it's...
Then there's, this might get a little rough, but not too far from the church on Post Avenue, there was like a nightclub, and I go there with...
Yeah, the Winner's Circle.
I go there with a bunch of my friends, women, and... they couldn't understand. They couldn't get the attention of any of the other people there because it was like a gay bar.
Oh, it was a gay night, yeah. I think they had one night that was a gay night or whatever, you know. I wandered into those places. They're kind of fun, you know. I mean, having a fun time. But yeah, you got to be careful what you say. My editor keeps telling me that, you know, you got to be careful. You're going to get canceled. I don't really care, you know. It's not like I'm doing this for money.
So breaking news, the pickle factory in Farmingdale was known as Stern's Pickle Factory.
Stern's Pickle Factory. I thought that was a department store. That was,
who knew?
Stern's was over in Mid-Island Plaza. Now we're on this kick here, this nostalgic kick here. How we got onto this?
So we were talking about Fogo the Chow. So I'm there on a Wednesday night, packed.
Really?
Packed.
Wow.
A little pricey. $69 for the main show. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of that type of food, but I had to experience it. I was there with a bunch of people. It had a salad bar.
Yeah.
I guess if you got many of the entrees, even if you got a specific entree, gave you permission to go to that.
Yeah, I refer to those as the salad trough.
It's interesting. I don't know how they made out during the, the pandemic when you couldn't do that type of stuff. But it was interesting. You know, you put your medallion down if you want food, and they stop by or whatever.
Are they red and green or something?
Yeah, they're making money off of me when I go. I'm just not somebody that can load up on food. I don't like that uncomfortable feeling of being stuffed. So I would get little tastes of it, but. The spice is very similar that they do on everything. And it was anything, I think, different cuts of steak. There was chicken. There was bacon wrapped something. There was some ribs. There was no seafood at all. There was no grilled shrimp or anything. It was enjoyable, but just not my ultimate. But I was really, I was surprised at the number of people there. And again, at the cost, because... we were three guests, and the bill with tip was like $275, and that was like a cocktail each.
Yeah, no, the first one I went to was years ago. A girlfriend of mine was working for Food Network actually, and they had their Christmas party at Platforma, Churrascaria Platforma in the city. I thought she had the name wrong. I'm like, hey, what? You know. Anyway, I went in there and I was like, yikes, you know. It's the antithesis of the restaurant that I would normally go to because I'm not a big steak guy. A, B, I don't want to eat until I feel like I swallowed a small farm animal, you know. And C, it's too busy and too big and too not for me. But I was impressed with the amount. I mean, they must have sat 500 people. This place is enormous, you know. And they were cranking. And it was holiday season. Whatever.
Here on Long Island, we have two restaurants. I think they're... father and son, Rodesia.
Yeah, Rodesia, yeah. They're in Mineola,
one's
right?
In Mineola, which is a very Portuguese area.
Yeah.
And then there's one that opened up in the Merrick-Belmore area. And they're very, very popular.
Yeah, they're kind of like the, and I don't mean this in any kind of a derogatory manner, but they're kind of like the Ruth's Chris of Rodesios, you know what I mean? As far as, you know, it's like when you compare Ruth's Chris to like a Blackstone or Tony Scott. There's a little bit of a difference there in, not in price, but decor and everything else.
I just found it too much of the same. Again, the spice, the seasoning. Mm-hmm. So, but everybody should check it out if you can. I needed your advice, though. Tonight, I am going to Lamani in Manhasset.
Did you eat out as much as I do?
I think I do.
It's incredible.
I think I do. And again, I've mentioned this before. I want to nail it. I want to get, you know, the right thing. And I was doing some research, and a fish came up, and I'm not sure about what it is. Char?
Arctic char. Yeah, it's kind of like salmon, you know, very, very similar. It's probably, it's a genus and species thing, I'm sure, you know.
When you say similar to salmon, salmon is a an oily fish.
Yeah, char is a little, not quite as oily, but it's the same, you know, pink color and same shape and stuff, you know.
The thing that really intrigues me is it mentions grilled sardines. We've talked about sardines recently.
I love sardines.
Now, you open a can of sardines, it's got to be different than what grilled sardines
are. Well, yeah, the grilled sardines are fresh, you know.
So is it, when they serve it, is this something that's been filleted? Is it, you eat it with the skin?
Yeah, they serve it with the skin and the head on, you know. And some people just eat the whole thing. Other people, you know, you can eat the bones. They're not, they're really small and brittle, you know, and they're not hard.
So I should pick it up by the tail and just...
Yeah, like Felix the Cat, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, it's I mean, I don't, I'm not a big bone guy. I say you can eat the bones, but why would I do that, you know? So I just kind of flay it with my fork and take it off. But it's got a very, you know, very assertive flavor. Sardines are strong. You know, they're very oily fish. They're great for your heart. I mean, they got omega-3s coming out the window. And, you know, they're, I've only seen them really in Italian restaurants. Now, the Greeks, you know, the Greeks are fishermen by trade. I mean, you know, the islands and stuff, they're surrounded by water down there. And it's funny, you know, even in, you know, in pockets of populations in New York, you know, the Greeks, they're Astoria, which is right on the water up there on the bay, you know, Greenport, there's a tremendous Greek population in Greenport, and it's because of the water, it's because they're drawn to the fish, you know, and they handle it greatly. I mean, you know, when I go to a place like Lamani or any of the Kima, any of those Greek restaurants, I always get fish, and I always get it just, it's always like kind of plain grilled with a little oregano, lemon, and some great olive oil. I'm good with that.
And that was what was great about the menu at Jewel. You always had like a selection of fish and a number of different ways that you could get that, of which one was very simple, like you said. And my mind wanders.
No, come on.
To those that listen, understand. I ate at Dario's?
Daria.
Last week.
Yeah.
And I've always been told that you have to get the veal chop.
Right.
So, of course, I'm there and I look for veal chop.
So, what'd you get?
And I'm a simpleton. There's three different veal chops.
Ah, really?
So, I didn't know what to do.
Well, Larry and Curly.
So, there was like a grilled veal chop. Kerry got that. But it must have been, I'm showing Tom with my fingers, but it must be like.
Through the magic of radio, it was two and a half inches
thick.
Yeah.
You know, and they broiled it, I guess. She enjoyed it. Then there was something with chestnuts and...
Were they roasted over an open fire?
We're getting to that season.
Yeah, we are.
It was something with like a chestnut sauce. And then there was something with Fontana cheese.
Fontina.
Fontina cheese and wine sauce. So I got that one. I thought it was very, very tasty. The wine sauce made it a little too tangy. Maybe it was too lemony for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it would have been an insult to the chef, knowing after the fact, though, if I would have ordered, you know, the veal chop with just the Fontina cheese and without the wine sauce.
No, listen, we get those orders all the time. Gonna have the sauce on the side, gonna have no sauce, yeah, whatever, you know what I mean? It's even funny, you know, I've had people come up to me and they go, you know, you must go crazy when somebody orders like a porterhouse or a you know, a steak and they want it well done. I don't care. You're eating it. You know what I mean? You want it well done. You want to put ketchup, mustard. You can put mayonnaise on it. I don't care. Once you bought it, you own it. You know, you do whatever you want. I'm going to eat, you know, live and let live, libertarian chef. You know what I mean? Have it your way, like they say in Burger King or whatever, you know? And I really believe that. I mean, I don't look down at people who put ketchup on steak. I don't care less, you know. What's the difference if you put ketchup or A1 steak sauce, you know? you're more sophisticated. It's stuff, you know.
At Dario's, we also had an interesting appetizer. It was burrata, mm-hmm. which isn't so unusual.
No, it's ubiquitous.
But I believe it was almost like a pesto dressing.
Yeah, I do that. I serve burrata with arugula pesto and sometimes broccoli rabe pesto. Because you can make pesto out of any green vegetable, really, you know. You make it out of nuts, too. But, you know, everybody in the world's allergic to nuts now all of a sudden. So you got to be careful. I had a little girl. She was so cute. She was probably about 10 years old. And we were doing this Halloween party for the kids at the club, and you know, adults and kids. And she came up to me and she goes, Chef, are there any nuts in anything here? And I'm like, no, you're safe, you know. So she goes, well, does the oil that was fried in have any nuts with the French fries? No peanut oil, I promise you, you know. Well, were anything cooked with any? It's so cute, you know, because obviously she had a problem, you know what I mean? And when I see that kind of sincerity with a problem, you know, first of all, my heart goes out to her because she's going to miss out on some really cool stuff in her life, you know. And second of all, you just want to help them, you know. You want to make sure that they're okay. It's the pseudo, you know, I'm allergic to gluten. What can I eat? No, you're not, because if you were, you'd know. You know what I mean? Because the consequences are dire. So now that we've established you're lying, you know what I mean? I'll tell you what I think. And, you know, can I have the mussels? No, there's soy sauce in the marinade. Oh, I can eat soy sauce. Well, then you're not allergic to gluten. So you have these two factions. You have the people who really have a problem, you know, gluten or nuts or otherwise, and the people who want to have a problem, you know, for whatever reason, attention, I don't know what it is. But so I lose my patience with the second group. And the first group suffers sometimes because I get cynical, you know, about, yeah, I'm allergic to gluten. Yeah, I know. And I'm an astronaut, you know, kind of thing. So
again, I'm going to Lamani tonight. I'm sort of tired of Branzino. It used to be like a specialty, but now everybody has it.
Yeah, well, it's not expensive, you know, as far as fish go.
If I want the fish, like with a crispy skin on it, what is that grilled?
Yeah, you got to grill it or saute it. You know, yeah. Branzino's kind of easy because it grills pretty. It's not thick, so it grills pretty quick, and you can achieve that crispy skin that way.
Will swordfish be on the menu, you think?
Well, probably, because it's fairly inexpensive at the moment, and you know, restaurants are always looking for a way to make a little money. Although Lamani doesn't have any problem charging for their food, you know, which they're entitled to.
Well, it's cool when you walk in there. It reminds me of the old days at going to River Bay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they'd have
a great restaurant,
and also the place London Lenny's in Woodside is to have the fish on fresh chopped ice.
Yeah.
But what would be something that you would recommend? Again, obviously, you don't know what's special that night, but
yeah, I don't know.
And a fish, you know, what's something different that I might challenge myself with?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they have. I mean, there's fish out there that, you know, come by. This time of year, I see blackfish every once in a while. I love blackfish. Sometimes Hawaiian opa. I just got a call from Honolulu Fish Company 2 days ago. TJ, his name is. Very nice. You can tell he was Asian. Japanese, I believe. And he was asking me, you know, do I want, you know, Hawaiian tuna, A1, you know, sushi grade Hawaiian tuna. I said, how much is it? $35 a pound. Well, I'm paying 22 at the moment, you know what I mean? So why would I pay an extra 15 to have it flown in here from Honolulu? You know, was it got a lay on? I mean, you know, a hula skirt, you know, really, it's kind of silly. And, you know, he's got Kona Kampache and all this other Hawaiian fish. Oh, no. But opa, we see around here every once in a while. I mean, you've seen opa. Opa is like it's almost like a round fish with a tail and a beak. And
that would be a whole fish you order, or is that a
steak? No, opas are too big. It'll be a steak, yeah. Opas, you know, 35, 40 pounds, some of them. And but they're odd looking. They call them moonfish sometimes because they look, you know, just like the moon. But their flesh is, it's kind of like pompano, which is another one of my favorites. The flesh is a little harder, kind of like swordfish, you know, not like flounder, you know, whether it's flaky. You know, this is more steaky, you know, kind of fish, the opa. But it's got a unique little flavor. It's not very fishy. It's got kind of a, I don't know if I think it's like almost like a cross between, this is going to sound crazy, flounder and fluke, salmon and fluke. You know, it's not quite as mild as fluke. It's not quite as strong as salmon. It's right in the middle there. But a fun fish nonetheless. I like those.
Okay.
I mean, if you're not a big oily fish guy, sardines probably isn't the way to go for you.
I'm not particular. Carrie's not a salmon person.
Yeah, then she doesn't like
salmon. So, and we usually share, so I guess I'll be
kind.
Tied down by her a little bit. I want to push her a little bit on this one. But I'm really excited about dining there in a couple hours. What would be a nice wine for tonight that I should? Obviously, I'm going to be probably doing it by the glass, so I'm not going to be able to choose from the full bottle selection.
Well, being a Greek restaurant, I'm going to make a guess here, and I'm going to say they probably have an assyrtiko by the glass. Assyrtiko, something like that, assyrtiko. Great little white wines from Greece. Malaguzzi is another one, but I really like assyrticos. They remind me of a cross between Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc. They're not quite as acidic or citric like Sauvignon Blanc could be, and not quite as buttery and round as Chardonnays can be. They kind of cut down the middle, which and some of them have just this explosive, great flavors.
So what are these again?
Assyrtiko. A-S-S. can we say that on the radio?
Yeah.
A-S-S. I want to do it again. A-S-S. I-R. I think it's, well, Y-R. T-I-K-O. Something like that.
And what was the other one?
Malaguzia.
Malaguzia?
M-A-L-A-G-O-U-Z-I-A. Malaguzia. But they make really good wine in Greece. You know, I've had some exceptional reds, and the assyrticos I love. If you ever get a chance,
Harry and I have this fantasy about doing the Greek islands and on a yacht, a private yacht, you know, with your own chef.
Well, you know, you're gonna have to shoot the Lako if your safety deposit box to pull that off. You know, that sounds like a pricey little trip to me. Oh God,
a man can dream.
Yeah. You know. Somebody was saying to me the other day, you know, you do a lot. You know, you get the restaurants going, you get the club going, you get the music thing going, you get the book going. You know, I'm like, you know, two things. One is, if you don't watch TV, there's a lot of time to fill. So you can practice an instrument, you can write a book, you can, you know, whatever your hobbies are, build a house, I don't know. And two is, as I get older, nobody's ever come back and said, you know, you're going to have a second and third shot at this. So I'm assuming this is the only chance I'm getting. And I like to get it all in, you know, before the big day, you know. So,
well, you know, I agree. And one of the things on my bucket list is to shadow you on a food crawl in New York City, as you've described here on the show.
Yeah, we could do that. I can make that happen.
My goodness, that, you know, between the... the Asian version that you've mentioned, I forget what they call the chef special when you go to a...
tasting menus.
Yeah, but a sushi restaurant, you always...
Omakase.
Omakase. Mm. And just in general, you talk about, you know, again, doing a crawl, having an entree at this place, an appetizer at this place or whatever.
Yeah.
It's so my game that...
Oh, yeah, no, it just makes it so much more fun, you know. The only problem is getting to and from, you know, you get cabin here and cabin there, you know.
Well, I've heard people...
It's easier in the summer.
You know? I've heard people do it by neighborhood.
Yeah, for sure.
The one that I'm most familiar, I never got there, but it was the a food crawl in the meatpacking district.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a small geography.
Yeah, they're all kind of right there, yeah.
But, I'm such a foodie, and that's why... You know, being able to do the show with you is incredible.
No, it's fun. It's just I can't think of any other entertainment that is as fulfilling. I mean, you know, I'll go see a show like when Steve's coming to the Paramount in February. I'll go to see that. I don't go to much music shows anymore. So ZZ Top a couple of years ago. And it's fun. But there's something about, you know, going out to dinner that it's expansive. It's the food, it's the wine, it's the conversation, it's the look around, it's the atmosphere, it's the, you know, belch when you get home, you know, all of it, you know, just kind of, I don't know. And I'm probably poisoned because it is my passion and my pursuit. But for the most part, I think that, you know, as much as I do it, and I do it all the time, I never get tired of it.
And I wonder if it's like this all over, because on Long Island, there's no question about it. You know, Saturday nights, Friday nights, Thursday nights, People enjoy getting out there and, you know, making four reservations and showing up at one.
Oh, please, you know, the bane of my existence, reservations. If you could come up with a reservation system that guaranteed that the person who made the reservation will show up for the reservation at the allotted time of the reservation with the people that he was supposedly bringing to the reservation and sit down at the time that the reservation is, you would make more money than Ron Popeil, you know, with the pocket fisherman or whatever the hell he was. It's just nuts. I mean, I don't know what the... It's you can't commit. Nobody can commit. Commit to the restaurant. Commit to the time. You can't commit to the amount of people. Nope, can't do it.
So I'm going to ask you to commit. We are essentially 3 weeks out from Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we did a very interesting thing. We actually did a video series of three different side dishes, but... might you take some time to figure out something Thanksgiving-ish, and maybe we can visit you over at the club in the kitchen.
Yeah, maybe we can do maybe salads this time or potatoes. You know, we did vegetables last time. So, yeah, we'll do something. It'll be fun. Also, I got to plug this quickly because we don't have much time left here. But I talked to Nelson DeMille this week, and he's writing a blurb for my book. And you know what he told me? He said, I read the manuscript. He goes, I got to tell you, it's the funniest, wittiest book I've read in 10 years. And I was like, really? He goes, no, I'm not blowing smoke, you know, at you. I'm just, you know, telling you what it is.
At the ASS.
Yes, yeah. At the Acidico. I'm not blowing smoke up your Acidico. I'm just telling you that. And I'm like, wow, thank you, man. And he goes, yeah. So anyway, I'm excited now. I'm more excited than when I wrote it. So it's coming, I think, probably sometime in March. If anybody's interested, I will let you know how to get a hold of that book, and you can read it and hopefully have some laughs. Maybe you'll even recognize a friend or a relative in there, and you could sit them down and counsel them about how to behave.
And before we leave and you give us your favorite legendary outro, again, to our listeners, fire@whli.com. Please send us some information, pictures, questions. We love hearing from you.
Okay, we're going to close with Tom's three keys to life, which are, as always, life's too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized sized desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.